You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The literary and wizarding worlds were stunned earlier this month when the Sunday Times of London revealed that Robert Galbraith, the author of an unheralded crime novel called The Cuckoo's Calling, was actually J.K. Rowling of Harry Potter fame. And then Miss Rowling confessed that she had indeed written the novel. Ben Zimmer, the Wall Street Journal's language columnist and the executive producer of Vocabulary.com, joins us now to explain how a pair of linguists were able to identify Ms. Rowling as the book's author. It's the subject of his July 16th Wall Street Journal blog called The Science That Uncovered J.K. Rowling's Literary Hocus Pocus. And I'm very pleased that it brings Ben Zimmer back to our show. It's always a pleasure to see you.
Thanks.
Is it just experienced authors that have writing styles idiomatic enough to identify them, or do we all have them?
We all do, but we shouldn't think of it that we all have some sort of fingerprints that will immediately identify our writing style. It's a bit more complex than that, because even one person can have a whole variety of writing styles. You think about the way that you might write an email or a text versus a formal letter or something informal, or a short story if you write fiction, that you might use a literary style. So one person can have lots of different styles in their own writing. Still, if you look at something like how fiction writers write and compare them, line them up once against each other, and look at certain textual features, you see patterns emerging, certain habits in the way different people write.
Do the factors that inform colloquial speaking also affect idiomatic writing styles?
Yeah, I mean, something like that varies from writer to writer. And so
But if somebody were to transcribe what I said and then transcribed what you said in this conversation, would they immediately be able to say, oh, that was Ben, forgetting about what we're saying?
I see.
But just from the style.
Yeah. Well, again, we can look at certain patterns. And what we're talking about with the J.K. Rowling case is literary analysis. But when it comes to people's speaking styles, that may come up, for instance, in court cases. For instance, if you hear an anonymous call or something like that where you want to identify who is speaking, you might
depends on who the parents are.
That's true.
So my son. No, it's my son.
So there could be, again, certain features that give us away to varying degrees in the way that we speak as well as the way we write.
The linguists on the Rowling case, Peter Milliken of Oxford University and Patrick, is it Juola?
Yeah, Juola.
Of Duquesne University, used forensic stylometry
right.
to analyze the cuckoo's calling. What's forensic stylometry?
Well, there have long been different sort of forensic techniques to try to identify the author of a text when the authorship is in dispute. And this goes back quite a ways. For instance, obviously you can think of people arguing, did Shakespeare really write all of the plays attributed to him? Or something like the Federalist Papers, where they were all written under a pseudonym, but we know that there were just three authors, Hamilton, Madison, and Jay, who wrote them. So people have tried to come up with techniques to identify the textual features that might help to attribute a text to a particular author. In the case of something like the Federalist Papers, it's kind of easier because you only have three authors to choose from. So you can start looking for patterns for those three. And then if there's one that's not attributed and you have to figure out which one of the three did it, you could look for how it lines up with what we know about those three authors. So something similar happened like that with the Rowling case, where they compared her writing. They compared the Cuckoo's Calling, which they had a hunch was written by Rowling, to work that we know Rowling wrote, and as well as some other distractors, some other authors thrown into the mix to see what was most similar.
Some female crime fiction writers: Ruth Rendell, P.D. James, Val McDermott. Well, Robert Galbraith is a man's name. Why did they only look at women's writing?
That's a good question. I think the way it went down was that the writers of the expose for London Sunday Times, they got this tip, this anonymous Twitter tip, that the author was really rolling. And they wanted to try to figure out, was this really true? And so they were sort of testing a hypothesis. And because Rowling is a female British novelist, and they when they went to these two experts, I think they thought it was best to compare like to like. So, you know, if you had an American in the mix, for instance, well, Americanisms obviously might mark that writing as different from the way a British writer writes. So I think they were trying to put aside things like dialectal features and just look at those idiosyncrasies of writing to try to figure out, is this book, Cuckoo's Calling, more like what we know from Rowling than it is from these other British female writers?
Now, this is not a new idea. We had Joe Klein identified as anonymous many years ago. Are we using similar computer programs?
Well, you know, there are different sort of quantitative versus qualitative approaches to figuring these things out. And so with something like the attribution of primary colors, the novel that it turned out was written by Joe Klein, the Time columnist, back in 1996. Again, there were some good clues already that Klein had written it, and then certain experts, Donald Foster was one, looked again at known Joe Klein writings and compared it to Primary Colors to try to find similarities. And there's a kind of a qualitative way of doing that where you say, well, you know, I'll just pick out certain stylistic features that I think are important, and, you know, it's sort of using the connoisseur's eye as like an art expert trying to identify who painted a particular painting. But
there are certain linguistic tics that people have.
Right, yeah. So it's a question of whether you look for those tics either with this sort of more qualitative method of saying, oh, look at that. That's a little mannerism that I noticed. Or you use this more kind of data-driven computational approaches, which is what the two experts did with the J.K. Rowling case. And so in that case, you're not relying just on your sort of selective judgment, but in this case, you're taking the whole text and you're doing kind of data mining on it in order to figure out things about like the length of words or words that tend to go with other words or even the frequency of very common words like what are called function words, little words like prepositions and conjunctions and articles that we tend not to think about when we're looking at writing, but a computer is very good at picking all these things up.
They look at character foregrams. What are foregrams?
Well, that's just a way of divvying up a text into chunks. In this case, chunks of four characters, and those characters can be letters, they could be spaces, they could be punctuation, and it's a very fast kind of brute force method of getting a lot of data and looking at a lot of patterns about the way that someone writes. You're not even paying attention in that case to the boundaries between words. You're just running these tests in order to develop statistics about the way someone writes. And it's interesting, even though you're using these kind of brute force or dumb methods, it can actually build up a kind of a picture of the way that someone writes that ends up showing you their tendencies or their patterns.
But there are certain things, certain word choices, for example, you can choose one word or its synonym. And Patrick Drouilla cited a number of ways you could say the fork is to the left of the plate.
Yeah, that's a nice example, because if you think about, you know, just describing the position of a salad fork to a plate, you could say it's to the left of the plate. You could say it's on the left of the plate. You could say it's at the left of the plate or to the left side of the plate. You know, these are using prepositions, just little words that, again, we're not necessarily thinking about very much. But it turns out that each of us, when we're writing or perhaps speaking, have certain tendencies. And if you count up those patterns, then it sort of paints this larger picture.
My guest is Ben Zimmer, who writes the Wall Street Journal's language column. He's also executive producer of Vocabulary.com. His article on this story, The Science That Uncovered J.K. Rowling's Literary Hocus Pocus, did it prove inconclusively all of these computer examinations that Rowling was the author of The Cuckoo's Calling?
Well, no. The experts are the first to say that there was no conclusive proof about this. All they were able to say was that when you ran this textual analysis, on these different texts, you could see that Cuckoo's Calling shared more similarities of these features that we've been talking about with other things that we know Rowling wrote compared to these three other authors.
But there could have been a whole bunch of other authors,
sure,
including some who are not famous,
absolutely,
who might have even had more similarities.
It's possible. So it was not conclusive proof. It was at most it was suggestive that there were enough similarities in conjunction with the things that the writers of the Times already knew, including this anonymous Twitter tip, that allowed them, they were armed with that, they were able to then confront Rowling and her publisher and say, hey, was this really you? But it was not conclusive proof, and if you were to bring this to a court of law, it might not stand up to that kind of burden of proof.
Well, back in 2011, just a couple of years ago, you were on the show to discuss the role of forensic stylometry in a lawsuit against Mark Zuckerberg.
That's right. I mean, this is something that I've been following for a while. And what was interesting about the Zuckerberg case, in that situation, we have a guy named Paul Seglia, who had claimed that he should have half of the Facebook fortune based on contract and emails that he claimed Zuckerberg exchanged with him back when he was still a Harvard student. And so part of the defense against this claim was to say these emails that Seglia is claiming that Zuckerberg wrote are dissimilar enough from what we know Zuckerberg wrote at the time, because we have, you know, actual emails that Zuckerberg wrote, and you could pick out features from those purported Zuckerberg emails to say they weren't his. But there was a lot of dispute over that at the time, over this quantitative versus qualitative approach that I was describing. The expert that the Zuckerberg lawyers had took this more stylistic approach where, again, he was just picking out what he thought were the important features, as opposed to this type of approach, what's called stylometry, which, again, is more data-driven, computational, not relying so much on the connoisseur's eye.
And then things change. The fashions of writing a text or email change fairly quickly, don't they?
Styles do change. Well, especially
with young people.
That's true, and especially with new genres of writing, like texting and other sort of short form communication. The conventions are really kind of emerging in that case, as opposed to something like fiction writing or the writing of a novel, where we have more sort of recognized conventions of the genre, which might help sort of fix it a little better than these sort of new up and coming emergent genres of writing.
What about something you mentioned just in passing a little while back, whether the plays attributed to Shakespeare were actually written by William Shakespeare? I'm sure a lot of work has been done on that. What conclusions have the experts come up with?
You know, I haven't really looked too deeply into that. I know, obviously, this is something that extends all the way back to the 19th century, where, you know, there were the Baconians who claimed that that Bacon was the true author of the plays. From what I've read, there's certainly nothing conclusive in this kind of forensic approach that would say, that Bacon was the true author of that. Again, I mean, you have to have a good body of texts in order to study it. And if you're trying to prove that it wasn't this guy named Shakespeare who wrote it, well, do you have other things that you know that this guy Shakespeare wrote that you could compare it to? So it really requires a kind of a body of texts that are known to be by the author to say whether or not some disputed texts were written by that person.
It's been suggested that the anonymous tip on Twitter was from either someone connected with the publisher or to J.K. Rowling, because despite good reviews, the book wasn't selling well. and now it's a national, it's a monster bestseller around the world. So did it become a better book once it was revealed that J.K. Rowling had written it?
That's a good question. There were a lot of conspiracy theories floating around, but then eventually it was revealed who sent in that anonymous tweet.
Oh, we know now?
We do, actually. Yeah, yeah. So there was an entertainment law firm that Rowling was associated with, and a partner in that firm knew the identity that Rowling wrote this book, Cuckoo's Calling. He let it slip, apparently, to his wife's best friend in confidence. And this woman named Judith Caligari was the one who... who was the source of the tweet, and that law firm has apologized unreservedly to J.K. Rowling for letting it slip. But yeah, I mean, it is a good point that it certainly has worked out quite well in her favor and her publishers in terms of all the publicity that it's gotten.
Yeah, bookstores were thinking of sending books back. And now they're ordering thousands of copies.
Right, and the first printings are worth thousands of dollars.
The article that we've been talking about, Ben Zimmer's article in the Wall Street Journal, is The Science That Uncovered J.K. Rowling's Literary Hocus Pocus. You're going to be looking into the science in the future? There are a lot of other books that have been written by mysterious writers.
It's a fascinating topic, and yeah, I'm tracking this closely. Yeah, if there are any other sort of literary detective stories like this, I'll be paying close attention.
What's this week's article about?
Well, for Wall Street Journal, I write about a word in the news every week, and so for the Saturday Wall Street Journal, I'll be writing about the word drone, very much in the news. Now, very often we hear it as a verb, like to drone someone, meaning if someone is suffering from a drone strike, being killed or targeted by a drone, then now we say that person is droned.
And I've wondered why a word that also means someone droned on and on and on when he was talking, got attached to these robotic planes.
Well, both kinds of drones go back to the bee that works for, the queen bee, basically. And so the droning on and on is like the buzzing sound of a bee. But then in World War II, drones as these pilotless aircrafts were controlled by remote control in a way, I guess, that was seen as similar to those bees who sort of are at the behest of the queen bee.
Ben Zimmer, thank you so much for being with us again.
Thanks. Always a pleasure.